This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
MuggleCast 28 for February 19th, 2006. GoDaddy hosting plans are now more powerful than ever. Best of all, plans start at just $3.95 per month. And no matter what plan you choose, your site receives 24/7 maintenance and protection in the GoDaddy.com world-class data center. I use them for my personal website, AndrewSims.com, and I know that GoDaddy has some of the best affordable hosting plans online. I recommend you use them for your upcoming website or podcast, because as a MuggleCast listener, enter the code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, when you check out and save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet today at GoDaddy.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of MuggleCast. This is the show where we bring you the latest in Harry Potter news, theories, discussions, whatever you want, all bundled into a little hour of your time. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Kevin Steck.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And joining us this week for the first time ever, Laura's excited because it is another girl on the show.
Yes.
Rachel Godoy, MuggleNet content extraordinaire. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you very much.
Wait, no, Laura, it was Rachel's turn to talk.
Wait, that's me.
No, that was Rachel.
Oh.
You guys sound a little like,
no,
okay,
everyone,
it's cool.
Everyone said
guys,
that.
Guys, write to Andrew.
Yes, you do.
Andrew at staff, okay, and tell him that Rachel and I do not sound alike.
On second thought, please don't.
who was that talking?
Be quiet.
I can't even tell. No, I'm kidding. Before we go anywhere else, first let's check in with Micah for the past week's top Harry Potter news stories.
Thanks, Andrew. Some Order of the Phoenix casting news. Afshana Zad, the actress who plays Padma Patil, has now confirmed in an interview with Manchester Online that she's coming back for the fifth movie. Her twin sister, Parvati Patil, will be played by Shefali Chaudhuri. And John Cleese, the actor who portrayed nearly headless Nick in the first two films, has been rumored to be returning for Order of the Phoenix, but nothing has yet been confirmed. Ivana Lynch's mother and sister sat down with a local radio show in Ireland to discuss the casting process Ivana went through to be cast as Luna Lovegood and her personality in general. You can listen to the 5-minute interview over on MuggleNet.com. Speaking of movies for our international audience, a list of release dates have been posted on MuggleNet.com for when the Goblet of Fire DVD will be released in various countries across the globe. Don't forget, voting for the 2006 AOL Movie Phone MovieGoer Awards is still open. Nominations are in the areas of Movie of the Year, Goblet of Fire, Actor of the Year, Dan Radcliffe, Actress of the Year, Emma Watson, Best Scene Stealer, Brendan Gleeson, and Vilest Villain, Ralph Fiennes. The winners will be announced February 28th. The written version of the Black Family Tree that J.K. Rowling recently donated to Boogie International will go up for auction this Tuesday, February 21st. The Italian newspaper La Repubblica has now published a complete photo of the tree, which includes more details on the family. However, at JKR's request, some parts have been blurred out so as not to give away too much information. And the Spanish translation of Half-Blood Prince will be released this Thursday, February 23rd, at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Finally, an official announcement was made last week that our next Leaky Mug live podcast is set for July 29th with a tentative 6:30 p.m. start time at the JW Marriott in Las Vegas, Nevada. Attendees who are registered for Lumos 2006 will be given seating preference at the event. That's all the news for this February 19th, 2006 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
All right, thank you, Micah Tan. First of all, let's welcome Kevin Steck back to the show. He's been off for 2 weeks.
Three weeks?
Well, you haven't done voicemails for 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
Where have you been, Mr. Steck?
I've been busy with school. I've been overwhelmed. I'm sorry, it's true.
School. Yeah. Okay.
I'm taking 20 credits. You have to give me some leeway here.
Okay. Moving on to some announcements now. As we said recently, registration for Lumos was running out, and now it is completely sold out. The convention is 100% filled up. That means that we are going to be in for a lot of fun But one important thing to remember is that if you still want to go to the live podcast that we're going to be doing at Lumos, Las Vegas, 2006, at the end of July, you can still come and see the show, but it's going to be a first-come, first-served basis for those who are already registered. Then they're going to let those who haven't registered. Don't forget that we're going to post a page very soon with all the latest info about MuggleCast live in Las Vegas. On MuggleCast.com. That'll be in a few weeks. In other news, the Create Your Own MuggleCast segment is now closed. We received 20 to 30 entries. We haven't listened to them yet. Basically, people created their own MuggleCast segments, and the best one, chosen by us, will be aired on our show. And runners-up will be aired later on. We might put a whole show together of just user-submitted segments. The winner will be announced next week on episode 29... That's the February 26th show. And the winners will be receiving a MuggleCast t-shirt. Everyone who participated in creating the segment will win a MuggleCast t-shirt. And we'll have their segment aired, like I already said. And Laura?
I just wanted to give a shout-out to Noah from Georgia, who sent me his band's, I believe it's their first CD, The Warped Tones. And I just wanted to say, Noah, I had a great time listening to your CD. It's all the songs are on my iPod, and I just think it's really cool that you're doing something like this. You guys have exhibited loads of potential and talent, and I'm looking forward to seeing where you go. So good job. The reason that came so late, because you sent it in December, is because Ben can't manage the P.O. box, so I apologize on Ben's behalf.
That's why he's not here this week, Laura. I punished him for you.
Good. He's in the corner
now
again.
He's in the mail room, sorting all the mail for 5 months.
Yeah. And one last thing, we've been getting a lot of emails on this, and there is some concern. On HarryPotter.com, a few of you noticed that if you go Mouse Over Media, there's a new button that says Podcasts, which suggests, and which we now know is to be a Harry Potter podcast that is being developed by Warner Brothers. And we got emails from people saying, well, what the heck? Are you guys going to cancel your show now?
No.
And the answer is, well, I was going to say yes, but if you don't want to, then no. we're not going to cancel the show. It will still be just as exciting as ever. Honestly, I think we should be flattered that Warner Brothers is doing a podcast, because between MuggleCast and Pottercast, we have created quite the Harry Potter podcasting phenomenon.
Yeah.
And without all the shows that have been created now, I really don't think Warner Brothers would have ever considered it.
Yeah, I think there was definitely some influence there.
Yeah. Now, what are they going to have on the show? Probably some good stuff.
Yeah, I would guess interviews and stuff like that.
How are they going to approach it? Do you think that they're going to have adult hosts or kids hosts? Oh, it'll definitely be hosts, adult hosts.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Who are they going to have to do it?
They could be like the Disney Channel, where they get all the kids to, like, do all the reporting.
Yeah, but the Disney podcasts are not hosted by children.
Oh, that's just because they're unreliable.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have asked us.
We would have done it.
I don't want to do a podcast.
Yeah. But seriously, we look forward to seeing what they're going to be doing. We don't think it's going to be, well, I don't think it's going to be like a weekly thing.
No.
I think it's going to be like a nice Order of the Phoenix promotional podcast. I'm sure that, they'll have interviews, like someone else just said.
That was me.
But it's not like every show is going to be hosted by Harry Potter stars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the effect on MuggleCast will be very minimal. We're kind of hoping that they're going to have a little section that says other Harry Potter podcasts, and we're going to be right there. Please, Warner Brothers. Please. We'll link back
Come
to you.
Come on, you
I
know
promise.
You love us.
Yeah. No. So we look forward to that. Thank you for your concern, though. But we'll be okay. We got a lot on the show this week, including the return of voicemails.
Thanks to me.
Finally!
Thanks to Kevin. I didn't want to blame you, but if you insist, we will. But first, let's get to our main discussion this week, which is our continuing series on a specific character in the Harry Potter series. This week is Minerva McGonagall. So some basic info here. She is 71 years old, according to the official Harry Potter timeline. She is a member of the Gryffindor house, and her distinguishable characteristics, her square-framed glasses and her black hair pulled back severely into a bun. She is a registered animagus, with her animal form being a tabby cat. Now, let's get on to some questions that we have thought up here. A few of these were submitted by Terry, who suggested doing McGonagall in a future episode, so thank you to her. One of the first questions is, what is her purpose as an animagus? We saw it in Sorcerer's Stone, she was spying on Harry and the Dursleys.
Yeah, but that was, what was that her specific purpose? I mean, I doubt that she became an animagus just to do that.
I'm saying that one purpose that she has found of it is to be able to spy.
But her purpose as an animagus, like, her, I mean, I don't think that anyone becomes an animagus with a single purpose in mind.
Yeah, I think it's just more a general thing.
Yeah, it's more for the ability than the...
So why can she use this ability for spying? Anything else?
I don't know. It seems like a bizarre question. Like,
I think that would just
purposes.
Be... I mean, it's
just, her.
Yeah, it's. I don't think there's any specific purpose she had in mind. It's just helpful.
What are her characteristic ties to the goddess Minerva?
Well, we know that Minerva was the goddess of crafts and wisdom, and she's also known as the warrior goddess. Zeus is her father, which suggests that whoever her father was might have some sort of high place in power, or had. I doubt he's alive anymore, but he could have been high up in the wizarding world. We also know, and this was kind of something that I found interesting, the goddess Minerva assisted the hero Perseus, I believe that's how you pronounce it, to kill the Medusa, and basically she told Perseus to look at Medusa's reflection so that he could dehead her, which I found kind of interesting because of the whole tie to the basilisk and stuff, even though Minerva didn't really have anything to do with that. And Perseus gave the head to Minerva, and she used it on her shield to turn her enemies to stone. And I kind of attributed that to the fact that Minerva sort of has this expression that when she puts it on, the students kind of freeze, because they're all a little intimidated by her. So.
Maggie Smith does a good job of this in the movies. I think she was a perfect choice for the role.
I agree.
Yeah, I do too. I think
she has that eye.
And she's one of, she's like one of those characters that they actually got correct. You know, like, not many people have complaints about them.
Well, they got almost all the characters correct. Nobody really complains about the characters.
I don't know if they got
I see
correct.
A lot of complaining.
Yeah.
Especially really? About the trio.
Well, we'll have to save that for another episode. Now, is she or pure blood?
Ooh.
Any proof behind this?
I don't think they've ever mentioned it.
Yeah. And would that really matter?
I mean, I think a lot of people tend to assume that Minerva and others like her are pureblood just because they just have such a knowledge of the wizarding world, and they tend to dress like wizards. But I don't think that would matter, because if she's 71 and she was muggle-born, she would have picked up the wizarding habits by now. So I don't know if we can know for sure.
Should it matter?
I don't think it matters.
I don't think it should matter if she's pure blood or not, in my honest opinion.
Not really.
Nah.
I mean,
not unless you're Draco Malfoy.
No, exactly. If you're that kind, then yeah, it does matter, but...
I think that, like Hermione, it doesn't matter because Hermione is one of the best witches in school, yet she's muggle-born, so I think it just goes to show that it doesn't matter what your background is.
Exactly.
Now, one question that someone asked was, she's mentioned to have been teaching at Hogwarts in Order of the Phoenix 39 years this December. And the question is, why would she start teaching in December? But my initial thought is, well, another teacher just dropped out or something happened.
Yeah.
It was probably no big deal.
It's probably no big deal, but it's possibly a big deal. You know what I mean? Like... That could be one of those things that she's saving for another time. Maybe in the war or something that happened. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like Dumbledore and what's that other wizard's name?
Grindelwald.
She mentioned it, but never mentioned it again, and it's supposed to be a big deal, so...
Well, do we know if Dumbledore went straight from being... the Transfiguration teacher to headmaster?
No, we don't. We don't really know.
Because if that's what happened, then it's always possible that he just became headmaster midterm and hired her.
Did that happen around the same time as Grindelwald? Grindelwald? I can't even pronounce it.
He defeated Grindelwald in 1945, correct? I think that that's around the same time Tom Riddle went to Hogwarts.
That could be possible as well. There could be a parallel between that. But I don't know. I think it's like Andrew said, the most likely
scenario
situation.
Is that another teacher left.
Exactly. Or died or something happened to them.
But there's always room for speculation.
For all we know, that other teacher was Grindelwald.
Ooh. I like that.
She's not in the photograph that Moody shows Harry in Order of the Phoenix. It's a picture of the original Order of the Phoenix. Now, why couldn't she have been working for the First War, and why is she in the Order now? I don't think in Order of the Phoenix we really saw much participation from
her. Well, she was showing up at meetings and stuff.
Yeah, but that's a lot like Hagrid as well. Because we didn't see any participation, but for all we know, she was one of the most active members. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Hagrid seems like a good go-to guy. Like, for simple tasks.
Yeah, but just my point is that people make assumptions that just because we didn't see them actively participating in certain order tasks means that they weren't. You know what I mean?
Also, I think that she's keeping a close eye on it, because if you'll remember in Order of the Phoenix, when Hedwig got hurt and Harry took her out of whichever class he was in, I think it was History of Magic, and he ran into McGonagall, and she was basically telling him, you know, giving him the hint that owls were being intercepted and stuff, and that Umbridge had probably been the one who injured her trying to intercept the letter.
And I've always imagined McGonagall as sort of like Dumbledore's heir, like the one where he passes down all his stuff to. You know what I mean? Like, sort of like Dumbledore is her mentor. Maybe I'm getting that incorrectly. You know, it's just, I just get that feeling from
her. No, it made sense. I mean, what was everyone's initial thoughts when Dumbledore died? Who's going to take over? McGonagall. It's the perfect choice.
Yeah,
so...
Except for those of us who think Dumbledore's still alive. Andrew?
No, I'm still mixed on that. Mixed on that.
I don't think that... I think a lot of people would look at that and try to say, oh, she was a Death Eater and all this other stuff, but I think it's just...
she was not a Death Eater.
Anyone who says that I think it's almost... Whenever I think about the First War, I almost think about it in the same sense as the Second War, that people either didn't know or didn't believe that Voldemort was around. It could just be a lack of information.
Well, it could also be that she was just dealing with her own problems. I mean, it was a war, so everyone was on one side or the other, you know? You were either the...
Or, you know, she might not have been there when they took the picture. She could have been off doing something important. We don't know.
That's true, yeah.
And, I mean, she must have known Dumbledore because, as we just stated a few minutes ago, she had taught for 39 years, and that would be way before the First War. So then the next question is, what will her role in the Order become now that Dumbledore is gone? I'd imagine she could step up, but on the other hand, now she has a school to run.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's what Dumbledore did.
I'm not sure who I could see taking Dumbledore's place, you know?
You don't think it's McGonagall?
I'm saying...
In the Order or at the school?
On the Order.
Okay. Oh. Order. I'm not sure who I can see taking that
honestly, kind of lead command position. I've honestly always seen, like, Lupin there, to be honest. Just because he's one of the only Order members that is able to pull himself out of, like, the real world, kind of, because of his affliction. So it enables him to have more time to devote to the Order, you know?
I also think the Order is going to become more of a group leadership effort, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like, I don't see it having one specific head person anymore.
That's true. Although, I was just thinking that Dumbledore could have made it clear who would take over.
He might have.
In the event that someone...
I'm sure he has some kind of will or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think I've said that before. I mean, I doubt he just left, you know, them sitting in...
Yeah, I think he knew there was a great possibility that he could die.
But no, Laura, you made a good point. I think it would make sense that they'd all become a team rather than having just a leader.
And that might be what they need.
Let's talk a little bit more about McGonagall and Dumbledore. Because in the first chapter on Privet Drive, she seems sort of out of the loop when finding out information from Dumbledore. But then she's surprised that Dumbledore recognized her in Animagus form. Dumbledore says, Minerva. And, you know, she's like, well, whoa, how do you know? So how close or distant is their relationship together? I think in the beginning, in Harry's first year, it definitely wasn't as close as it was now.
I think it's something that developed because of Harry.
She's head of house, he's head of school.
And is that possible? Maybe that's a possible reason for why she wasn't in the Order at the time of the First War. Because,
yeah, because
their
Dumbledore
relationship
seemed to
was
be,
strained, yeah, I mean, it's
seemed
possible
to be recruiting
that,
people that he knew well. Yeah.
And in each book, she really steps it up in handling, like, Chamber of Secrets. I'm not referring to the book, I'm referring to the actual problem with the Chamber of Secrets, all these people getting petrified, and she steps up. And this continued throughout the rest of the series, and none of this really happened before Harry got there. Any of these big events, so yeah, they absolutely could have bonded together.
Well, that could go straight into the whole theory, you know, do Dumbledore and McGonagall, did they have some sort of romantic interest in one another?
Oh no.
Oh,
I doubt it too.
I don't think so, but I know a lot of people like the pairing.
It was an office relationship.
No. Yeah, I think so too.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, but I've actually seen quite a few fan fictions on that topic.
Wow. Okay.
Now what?
Let's get off that topic very fast.
Rachel is blown away.
Oh,
she
yeah.
can't even imagine it. So what have we seen from her in terms of magical ability besides her animagus transformation?
Well, she was fighting the Death Eaters.
Stunned. She got stunned 5 times in the chest. And even Madame Pomfrey, excuse me, I was thinking of the librarian for a moment, she said that it wasn't every, you know, aging wizard that could take that many spells in the chest and come away from it. So I think she's definitely pretty powerful.
Also, I also think that the reason that McGonagall's so powerful is because her relationship with Dumbledore, you've got to learn a thing or two from him, I guess. You would assume so if you...
Everybody does.
I agree.
Yeah, so I think that that's pretty much the reason why she's gotten... she's a pretty strong wizard because of that. She's been with Dumbledore for quite some time now, so I guess it's developed as their relationship's developed, I guess, you would think.
I'm sure he's probably shown her a thing or two.
So
yeah.
She seems very devoted to Harry throughout the series. Any particular reason for this, Laura?
I think it's because she showed a considerate amount of sympathy at the fact that the Potters had been murdered, and I think that just being their teacher and seeing what kind of struggle their son has to go through, I think she wants to help him facilitate any of his dreams, goals, whatever she can.
Well, I was just going to say that she seems like one of those all-around nice people. So it just seems like she sympathizes with his situation. I don't think it's any particular love of Harry. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, that's
she's
true.
Built,
she's very
exactly,
motherly.
She built a relationship with him, but she. I don't think the initial, you know, helping was for the fact that he was Harry Potter. You know, she just sympathized with his situation.
She'd be that way, in other words, she'd be that way with any other character.
Exactly, yeah.
I wouldn't think so. Like, I think, like...
In her house?
Yeah, like, I think her devotion to Harry can, like, it mirrors her, I guess, maybe her relationships towards the Potters. But I can't really see her being that way towards, Ron or even Hermione. I don't know, it just seems that it's something that she'd only do for Harry, in my opinion.
Well, and I think that she was fairly fond of them when they were at
school.
Yeah,
they were. Exactly.
When she found out they were dead, she said, Lily and James, I can't believe it. She called them by their first names. It wasn't a last name basis like she tends to refer to her students as.
Yeah, but I still see her as a person who, if any other student had their parents killed, she'd still be just as sympathetic and helpful.
I think she's sympathetic, but at the same time, she treats Harry like another student.
Look at Neville. You know, I mean, well, now that she built the relationship, yes, but what I'm saying is initially, when she first met Harry, I think that she, if if it was anyone else, she'd be just as sympathetic.
Well, I think that she would definitely have some sympathy for the person, but even if it were anyone else, they're not the boy who lived, and they're not the chosen one. Harry is, and he's got even a larger burden over anyone else who's lost their parents, because he's the one who has to defeat Voldemort.
I guess I just believe that she sees past that.
I think she would definitely be helpful in giving other students guidance.
Well, I think she'd be helpful as acting as a motherly figure to anyone who has lost
their
parents. That's what I'm saying.
She's definitely a fairly stern motherly figure. She does it without being unprofessional in a teacher sense.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying. I believe that she's also professional in the sense that she offers sympathy when sympathy is required. And if someone else lost both their parents, she'd treat them the same way as she treated Harry the first time.
I still stand by my word that McGonagall, I don't know, it's just more of a Harry thing towards her. And of course, she is motherly towards everyone, I guess, but I think there's just something.
So you think that, like, she's looking over Harry as sort of, she feels an obligation?
Yeah, as more of a son. Well, not really an obligation, but I don't know, like, it's weird because, like, when she talks about the Potters, it's like, you see that she really did have some sort of really close relationship with them, so I guess she feels the need that she has to, like, protect Harry as her own. And, yeah, well, I do agree with Kevin, though, like, if it was anyone else who parents had died, she'd do the same, but...
Yeah, I agree. I think the differing factor is that, like I said, Harry is the chosen one. He's the boy who lived. He's the one with this burden. And I think that's what makes a little bit of a difference in the way she's trying to offer Harry guidance.
Now, we've discussed this in the past, but is she definitely the new headmistress or just serving as a temporary role? I think we're on agreement. She's going to be the headmistress.
I think so, too. Who else are they going to put in that place? Although, yeah. I'm having terrifying thoughts of the ministry taking advantage of the fact that Dumbledore's gone and trying to shove someone back in there.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't think the ministry has... I think the ministry lost a lot of their power.
Yeah,
so,
I think so, too.
You know.
Absolutely.
They lost a lot of their credibility, so now they're...
Yeah, but just because they've lost credibility, is that going to stop them from using their power?
It may not stop them, but...
People won't like it, basically.
Exactly.
People will protest.
You have to remember, exactly, the parents are sending their students to, you know, their kids to this school. If the parents don't like what's going on, they're going to vocalize. And I think that it's always been shown that the majority rules in the wizarding world, and in this case, it's going to be...
Although it may sound a little too political for the Harry Potter books, she's going to have to prove herself somehow.
Do you think so?
Yeah, well, to the parents? Why would they trust this woman now? She's just jumping in and out of nowhere, unless Dumbledore...
Yeah, but she's been a teacher at the school for so many years.
And that means what?
A lot.
Anyone can be a teacher, that doesn't mean you can run a school.
But I understand that, but there's quite a few superintendents are originally teachers.
Well, consider how close did your parents pay to various and assorted superintendents at your schools?
And were these teachers, whoever became superintendents, ever in control of a school that was in danger of being massacred?
Because my parents, they mainly pay attention to my teachers.
Do you think that the order is going to be, like, public knowledge now? And two, do you think that would be enough to convince
people? I think the order is going to remain more of an underground type thing. Obviously, it'll be public knowledge to some, but if too many people know about it, then
no good would come out of making it completely public.
But I just think that the fact of her taking a stance on the Voldemort issue will have enough credibility. You know what I mean?
If you take a stance, that's fine. I just think McGonagall will have to prove to parents that the school will be safe, which is going to be a hard thing to do now.
I think it'll definitely be a challenge for her.
It will be, but I think she's capable of showing what she's got. So I don't think it'll be a big problem. Like, I don't think it'll be a big issue in the book for parents to be worried. It'll be, like, really small, and then people will be like, okay.
How much of that are we going to see? Because Harry says he's not going back to Hogwarts.
Exactly. If we even do see Hogwarts.
That question always comes back to haunt us. And now, is she going to be working closely with the trio in a way that Dumbledore did? Dumbledore helped Harry out a lot.
I don't think so either. Maybe in the sense of occasionally helping, but I don't think that any of the Order will play a vital role in the trio's searching for the Horcrux and all that stuff.
Well, I think it's...
I use Horcrux because I know people like that.
I think it's just part of the theme that Harry has to do it alone, and what would be the point of not having Dumbledore around anymore if someone else was going to come along and
exactly.
take his place?
Exactly, it's going to fill in, exactly.
And could Dumbledore have given her any sort of information before he died?
Vital information would have been given to Harry. I think some of, maybe the Order stuff, like the... this is what should happen, this is what should happen to the school, would go to McGonagall. But anything of, like, importance, like, to defeating Voldemort would be a Harry exclusive.
Mm-hmm. It's like Warner Brothers.
Harry exclusive.
Harry exclusive. Exactly. So she's been a Transfiguration teacher all these years. We think she's going to become the headmistress. Could she possibly teach Harry, give Harry a few extra lessons in Transfiguration that could help him?
I don't think so. I think that Harry is on his own. Yeah.
But why not help her out? Help him out.
Because he is separating himself from the school. And in doing that, I don't see him getting involved in the school in any way. I think he should, if it's my hope, at least, that he's going to be self-taught and anything from here on out that he needs to defeat Voldemort will be learned by Harry himself.
I also think that in terms of storytelling, there's a lot that needs to be accomplished in Book 7, and I'm not sure we're going to have time to see Harry go learn all sorts of new tricks.
Unless it's vital to what he does to get another Horcrux.
Maybe every once in
a
while.
All he has to do is transfigure into some small, unmovable object, and he's safe from being spotted from wherever he is.
Or someone will turn him into a Horcrux.
Yeah, there you go. So now let's move on to some voicemails. Finally, yes, after 2 weeks.
Oh my God, we have voicemails.
We started getting emails of concern. The people thought we canceled it.
Yeah.
And Kevin just canceled his interest in MuggleCast for 2 weeks. That's basically what happened.
I did not.
Hi, my name is Blake from Long Island, New York, and I was wondering why in the first book McGonagall was mentioned as an animagus, and then throughout the rest of the series, it was never mentioned again. So, thank you. I love your show. Bye-bye.
I would say that either one, she never had the opportunity to mention it, or two, it's going to be used in Book 7 in a specific way, and she doesn't want to reveal all the implications of being an animagus.
Or three, she had no reason to turn in into a
cat every five seconds.
She had no reason to turn into a cat. Yeah.
It was convenient for Prisoner of Azkaban because Hermione went and looked up the rosters for everyone who was an animagus, and she went to look up Professor McGonagall, and it was just a convenient part of the storyline for her to show that none of the Marauders were registered animaguses thingies.
Animagi. Look, I just coined a new word.
Yay, Kevin, you get a gold star.
Alright, now it's time to head into one McGonagall voicemail, then we'll go into some general voicemails. You guys ready? Kevin, you ready? It's been a long time. Here we go.
Hey guys, this is Kate from Chicago, and I was just wondering what you all thought of fanfiction. Are you a fan of it yourselves, or do you think fanfiction is just for delusional kids who have no time on their hands? Personally, I think fanfiction is a great time consumer between HP releases, movie, or book. What do you think? Thanks, bye.
Yeah, it is a great way to fill up time between books and movies, besides listening to our show, of course. Too bad Ben's on here because he is a big fan of fan fiction. Me personally, no. What about you guys?
Same. I think it skews my opinions of the book, so I don't read it.
I used to read a lot of fan fiction, obviously, because I used to moderate over at MuggleNet fan fiction. But prior to that, I'd say...
Especially the dirty stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, we did get some dirty McGonagall stuff, but I'm not going to bring that up here.
Okay.
No, I used to... I'd say between the ages of 13 and 15, I read a lot of fan fiction. There was a period for a few months where I actually wrote quite a lot of fan fiction, and I think it's really good if you're pursuing a writing career, whether it be in journalism, being a novelist, whatever. It's a good way to tone your skills, because Harry Potter is such a complex and diverse type of story that you can come up with so many theories and just... elaborate on them, and I think it's a really, really good output.
Yeah, and some of them.
So keep writing.
Some of them are beautifully written. What about?
There's some great stuff out there.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're good reads. It's just that I probably won't start reading them until after the final book.
And
yeah, that's true.
On the other hand, there's some really scary stuff out there. But
what are your thoughts on it, Rachel?
Well, I used to read fan fiction before I think it was sophomore year in high school. I used to read it a lot. But that was before I had my job on MuggleNet, so now I don't read it as often because, yeah.
You have no time,
I have
right?
no time because I'm always working for the site. But I used to write quite a bit of fan fiction. Not really a lot, but mostly one-shots. And I used to even be a beta for some fan fiction site. I don't even remember what it was named, but yeah, I used to read it a lot. It's really cool. Like, some of the stories I used to read were awesome, but yeah, I don't read as many of them anymore.
I also think that when you work for a site like MuggleNet and just any other Harry Potter site, you pretty much see all the theories.
Yeah.
That
and it's kind of redundant to read fan fiction.
I mean, it's not like fan fiction's really breakthrough on a lot of theories either.
No, but there, I can think of a couple that I read that I thought were just really outstanding, picked up on things that I hadn't noticed in the books, so there are definitely some talented people out there.
Although, you know what? I would like to see those people who are devoting their time to writing Harry Potter fan fiction to writing a book.
Well,
yeah.
I think that that's what people do, because, I mean... I don't write fan fiction anymore. I write my own stories now. And I really think that writing fan fiction sort of helped me find my ground, sort of helped me find my writing style, and kind of showed me what I wanted to do and what I wanted to write about. So I think it's a good thing. And I think a lot of people do sort of break through from fan fiction to their own fiction once they become more adult.
Yeah. And I do think that it's an... There are some people who get stuck on it, though, you know? Like, they aren't willing to take the next step to try to write their own material, and it's somewhat disappointing because they are writing such good fan fiction, you know they could be writing very good books, you know? So.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think... I think there are some fandoms you see that more in than Harry Potter. There are some fandoms where fan fiction is... kind of horrifying.
Yeah, I could imagine.
This is James from Southern California. My question is that there's been a lot of debate on MuggleCast lately about whether it would take more than one Avada Kedavra to kill Hagrid with his giant skin or a dragon. But it says in Book 4, the fake imposter Moody said, there's no counter curse, there's no blocking it, referring to Avada Kedavra. And I think there's no blocking it refers to nothing being able to block it. Even dragon skin or whatever. Just would like to hear your comments. Love the show. Bye.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's any blocking it. Because if there was any blocking it, then not as many people would be afraid of it. You know?
Right, yeah. Hagrid might be more prone to fight it. He might not be as much of a wuss.
Yeah, but I honestly believe it would kill Hagrid in one hit or a dragon in one hit, whether or not...
Well, I think that there are good points raised on both ends. I believe it was Ben who said it during the Hagrid episode that if you walk up to someone with a baseball bat, a normal person, you're going to do a lot of more damage to them as if you walked up to a dragon and hit them with a baseball bat. On the other hand, if it's a curse that can't be blocked, then it's reasonable to assume that it is a curse that could kill anyone, no matter their size or power.
Not to mention, we're not, who says it's even going to work on a dragon? For all we know, it completely, you know, the curse is only against humans.
It's exclusive to
humans?
Yeah,
it's possible. I mean, I think I've read theories where they said it actually, like, tears a person's soul away from their body or something like that.
Well, and but then Moody used it against the spider. Well,
that's
the
true.
Imposter
that's
Moody
true.
Used it against the spider.
That's
and,
true.
Goblet of Fire.
So I guess it works for all of them and it kills all of them in one hit.
Hey, this is Robert from Kissimmee, Florida. And I was wondering, if you could speak partial tongue, do you think that you could make, say, a snake your secret keeper? And another thing, what happened to Sirius's two-way mirror that he gave to Harry? They didn't mention it in Half Blood Prince, and I was really thinking they were going to do something with that. So, I love your show.
I guess that depends on...
Why would you make your snake a secret keeper, though?
Well, I guess the reason you would do something like that is not that many people are parcel tongues.
And it's not
so
like...
So it's not likely well, that your snake is going to go blab to somebody. So,
true.
And it's not likely that they'd suspect that person as being your secret keeper in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
To manipulate them, you know? Because
that's an interesting theory, though. I like that.
And but also, in that case, wouldn't it be wise of Voldemort to make Nagini his secret keeper for hiding the Horcruxes? And then
that's
they'd be
cool.
unfindable unless you had the snake.
That's,
but,
that's definitely something to
but
take into consideration.
As we know, they have found them, so...
Yeah.
It's an interesting possibility. I don't know how to...
Yeah, it is.
It is.
I don't think we can fully answer that. I mean, it's a possibility that...
No.
Yes, it could be that you could make an animal your secret keeper, but the implications to that aren't all that great.
Yeah, so. And as for Sirius's two-way mirror, Joe, I believe, did say that we were going to find out something about that, and I think that something that everyone needs to remember is there is one more book. And obviously not everything is going to be answered in Half-Blood Prince.
Hi, this is Summer from Alexandria. I was just curious as to, is there a way that you could transform into an animal and back from an animal by yourself that does not require you to be an animagus? Because in the fourth book, Crumb transfigures his head into a shark. I mean, it's at least partial transformation. And Moody and Mad-Eye turns Draco into a ferret. And it's just that might be a way that you could transfigure yourself, or at least somebody else could transfigure you. Thanks, bye.
I think the only benefit to becoming an animagus is, one, a more personal connection to the actual shape you become. And two, I don't think it requires a wand, does it?
No.
I don't think so.
Because, no, it doesn't, because Pettigrew did not have a wand when he tried to transform into a rat.
Well, wait, hang on. I'm not sure
right?
if I'm confusing the book and the movie.
I think
but
I,
it seems like I remember... I remember when Remus dropped his wand in Prisoner of Azkaban when he started to transform. Yeah. But I'm kind of having this thought that maybe you can transfigure yourself into an animal, but it's not a permanent thing, you know? Like, whereas being an animagus, however you pronounce it, you can turn into one and stay that way the rest of your life if you want to.
Yeah, so the transformation makes... It's limited by your magical ability.
Right.
Whereas an animagus, you can, you know, it's not limited by your strength or...
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as we saw, Crumb couldn't even fully transfigure himself into a shark. It was just his head.
So it's obviously some heavy magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, wait, hold on, guys. Before we get to the Dueling Club, I think I hear a knock at the MuggleCast studio door. Kevin, can you go see who that is?
One sec.
Just okay.
Hello.
It's right over there. Around the, right over yeah. There.
You guys want some cookies?
Oh my God!
Oh,
close the door.
Oh, it's a Girl Scout. oh no! It's a Girl Scout. They're selling cookies again. Wait, that's Eric Skold dressed in a Girl Scout uniform. Eric, shouldn't you be, like, recording the show rather than selling Girl Scout cookies?
I just thought I'd help out in the community. You know, doing my part, Andrew. Doing my part by wearing a skirt and prancing about with cookies.
And he...
Look, isn't that something you put on your headset and you walked right over to the studio table here? And it's amazing, because we're all in one room.
So well, see, I figured by doing this, I not only sell cookies, but I... You know, I mean, you guys, what, six people here, so I'm going to sell a lot of cookies. You'll all buy my cookies, won't you?
This will be
five.
You'll all buy my cookies anyway, right?
Yes, of course. So thanks for joining us, Eric. You were actually working at the movie theater.
Yes.
And you're fine job.
Yep.
Sell many tickets. What was the hit movie this weekend?
Hit movie so far. Well, it's only Friday. So
yeah, well, Friday night hit movie. What was it?
I'd have to say date movie.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah,
movie.
Date movie is getting lots of reviews. Lots of good people coming up to us for no reason and saying that was a really good movie. You should go see it. And we feel bad because we can't really see it. So,
do they allow you to see the movies?
We get to peek in if all our other jobs are done.
No, I mean, do they have like the 12 o'clock screeners?
Yeah. Well, there will be a screening of Date Movie tomorrow night, but unfortunately, Pennsylvania residents, I can't get you in. It's kind of employees only.
What about New Jersey residents?
Yeah, well, that maybe for you, but nobody else.
Oh. Okay. Well, thanks. I'll head straight out to save $7.
I have a strange feeling that somehow I'm going to find out that, like, 300 people... listen to MuggleCast right next door to me and all went in on this movie. And, you know, they've never contacted me before. I've never heard from anybody, but I have a strange feeling.
Well, as most of you know, the Dueling Club is where two co-hosts pick a wizard or witch behind the other person's back. And at the same time, they give each other their character, and then they figure out who would possibly win. It's an exciting new twist on the Dueling Club on MuggleCast.
It's so exciting.
One,
it's so exciting that it so exciting it warrants 5 seconds of silence.
Yeah. Yeah. Often imitated, never duplicated. Okay, so on three. Ready, girls?
Ready, Andrew.
Seriously, what's
how
so
many
funny?
How many times have we had that many girls on the show where we can just say ready girls?
I know.
Like,
usually it's Ready Boys and Laura. Okay. Okay. On three. One, two, three.
Professor
Flitwick.
I think Professor Flitwick would win just because he's so advanced at charms and he's obviously
a teacher.
Well, yeah,
you cheated. You got a professor. I got a student.
You're supposed to defend your character.
Be like,
I know.
Well,
he's... Well, he's kind of like an earhead, but...
I don't think there's enough...
No, I think Flitwick is definitely far more magically advanced than Cormac McLean could
ever
be.
Oh, you don't give Cormac enough credit. He might seem like an idiot or a jock or something.
But he's really a sweetheart.
Or like he has an out-of-control
really
temper.
Well, see, his temper might work, because then he might, like, curse you
out.
Yeah,
he might sit on Flitwick.
Yeah, see? He doesn't need his wand.
He's got
he could
his
just sit on him
thumping
altogether.
Fists.
And he wins! There. See, I win. There you go.
Yay, Rachel.
Yeah.
She's won her first.
Yay!
Game. Oh, please. Oh, please.
Well, I think that does do it for this episode of MuggleCast episode. What is this?
28.
Seriously, after. Once we got into the 20s, I just lost count. I'm like. For some reason, I can't remember.
Well, that's because you can't count over 20.
But oh,
Kevin
right.
Kevin can divide by
yes.
zero.
Right.
He would whoop Goyle
yeah,
any
I can.
Day.
Yeah, you would divide by zero. You'd think there's some theory behind it.
Wow, it's been 20 episodes since my first show.
It's been 25 since mine. 25 since mine.
Oh, it's been...
All these anniversaries since
mine.
It's been... I've been on every episode. I'm so proud of myself.
You should be
proud.
You've
of
edited
yourself.
Almost every episode.
I'm sick of it. 28, when you think about it, hasn't really been that much.
No, it has, when you think about it. Think of that,
hours.
And then think of it like 5-6 months, like half a year.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's what it's been. It's been half a year.
Yeah.
28, there's 52, so two weeks ago was like your half
a year. I can't wait for our year anniversary.
Aww.
It's going to be a fun show.
We're going to have a hazing.
Well, it's
going
to be right after Vegas. We'll have to record something down in Vegas and then put it out on August 4th. So once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Kevin Steck.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I added some force to that.
And I'm
and Eric, thank you for joining us at the end this week. It's always good to have you on.
Thank you, Andrew, for having me on.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 29. And don't forget that you can send in your questions, concerns, comments, complaints, whatever you want to mugglecast@staff.mugglenet.com. And also, if you have a question for us next week concerning Remus Lupin, who is the character we'll be going in-depth on, please send those in to voice@staff.mugglenet.com or call it in at 1-218-20-MAGIC.
Hey guys, this is Proma from Michigan, and I just wanted to thank you for episode 27, because it was just awesome. I mean, I was having, like, a really bad week before that, and it cheered me up. It was so hilarious. And not only that, but it was kind of a good luck charm. I mean, the next day, I found out I was going to Loomis. So, thank you. Just thank you. Thank you. Okay, I'm sort of tripping over my words now, but thanks.
Hey, MuggleCast, Anna from Maryland, and I just wanted to call and say how much I love your show, and Kevin, you rule, you're my favorite. I love you guys a lot, and keep up the great work, and I love watching the New York Live podcast. Great job, guys, you're hilarious, and Laura, I love you too. Bye.
Hey, this is Taylor Newman from Eaton Rapids, Michigan. Laura, you rock, man. But I was a little mad about episode 26 because Luna Lovegood could do so much better than that, man. Putting it down low on her, so. Boo, but I love your show. Okay, bye.
Hey, all you MuggleCasters. This is Jeffrey calling from California, and I have got one single thing to say about MuggleCast.
Yeah! All right!
Thanks. Bye.
Hi, this is Laura from Ohio. I love your show. I've been listening ever since it came out. I was really excited because I just got my iPod. Keep up the good work.
Hi, this is Spencer, and I just wanted to say I'm having a lot of fun watching the video, and Maiko looks like a young Jon Stewart, which is really creepy. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah. Well, in previous shows, we had said, well, could Hagrid possibly block it? Because he's got that... It seems kind of dumb when you think about it. He's got the coat on, which some... We had thought, well, maybe that helps. But then he's got a thick layer of skin.
The coat?
Huh?
The coat?
The coat.
Yeah, apparently there's something with the coat.
Have you seen that coat? He has everything in that coat. You never know.
Well,
it could have some sort of... It could...
Doesn't mean it deflects
stuff.
I know.
That's why I just said it's kind of stupid. But when I'm... Yeah.
No, I'm just... I'd never heard of a theory that Hagrid's coat could deflect...
That's what we said. Curves. That's what we said on the show a few weeks ago.
No, we were talking about his skin. His giant skin.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, then we were talking about coat, because then I was like, oh yeah, he's got the sausage hanging out of it.
That's not what we said. No. What happened was... No, apparently you don't. No.
Where is that Hagrid doll for the second time? Go ahead.
No. What happened was Eric said if that were the case, people would be buying Hagrid skin coats.
Yeah.
Like coats made out of giant skin.
All right,
and dragon skin.
Yeah, I said that. I'll just take it.
Okay.